Hello there, and welcome to The Bitch Fix, a podcast for women who want to jam out on their lives, live in harmony with their hormones, and reclaim their mood, energy, and mojo. I'm Christine McCarroll, functional nutritionist and women's health straight talker, and I'm here to tell it like it is on all things health, happiness, and hormones for women. So shake off that cape, Superwoman, because we're here to launch this thing.
Well, hey, girl, and welcome to episode 139 of The Bitch Fix. So first thing, you guys, happy solstice. I am recording this on the summer solstice. I think it will be a couple of days before you receive this episode, but it is officially the summer solstice, which means it is officially the longest day of the year. And I love really honoring and just recognizing these sorts of changes across the season. So if you are new here, you'll learn this about me, but anyone who's been listening for a while, you know that I am really a big believer in kind of just staying in tune with the cycles of the seasons of our lives, of our menstrual cycles. I really think it's important for us to not expect things to be the same all the time, but to be able to kind of ride the waves of things being different. Mm. So a couple of times a year, I do something called the detox for the equinox. So I do a detox personally and with clients around the two equinoxes, the spring and the fall. And then I just love to, in particular for me, honor the solstices. So the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year in December, and here we are in June, and it's the longest day of the year. And, you know, I really got a great lesson in what this physically feels like, this kind of riding the waves in the last few weeks. So I spent the end of May and beginning of June in Costa Rica, which is amazing. And I will probably be sharing more about that experience over the next few episodes because I had some seriously like life-altering, which sounds really big, but was true experiences while I was in Costa Rica. And one of the things that I did was I took surf lessons. And the experience of that was so insane, you guys. I'm not going to like tell you the whole surf story, but I'm going to tell you a couple things. The first thing was, this was for sure like the hardest emotional thing that I have done. And I don't even know how long, like probably a decade. I was super terrified to do it, but I was with a group and I had committed to doing it and I wanted to stay true. And I really wanted to push my own boundaries of what I was up against, right? So I wanted to experience something that I was afraid of and I wanted to do it anyway. And I didn't want to do it because I was not listening to myself or not valuing my own input, but because I know that I have more in me and I didn't want fear to keep me on the beach. So I did my surf lesson and I will just say it was exhilarating, you guys. And I did get up on my surfboard. I also didn't have a lot of confidence in myself going out there. I thought for sure I would just be somebody who like boogie boarded, kind of like lay on my stomach and just kind of like cruised in. And I actually did get up on that board. And if you follow me on Instagram, you probably saw that video. So I did post it in my stories on Instagram. I was super proud of that moment when I first got up on the surfboard. And It was like nothing I've ever experienced. But what I wanted to share about that particular thing was how much I could feel the ocean. So when I was out there and so we first got some lessons on the sand. So you kind of like just practice what it's going to be like in the ocean on the sand. And you're practicing even like laying on your board and paddling. And then you practice jumping up onto the board. And then you actually have to, of course, go out into the ocean. And what they kept telling us was that like to feel it, right? To feel when it was the right time to stand up on your board. Of course, I also had an instructor and I was also supposed to be listening to him. So I was like, I am just going to listen to this dude who knows what the hell he's talking about. I do not think I'm just going to be hopping up on this board whenever. But you guys, it was the wildest thing. When I got out there and, you know, my surf instructor was telling me when it was time to hop up on the board, but I could also feel it. Like I did not expect to be able to feel it and I could feel it. So there, and I cannot describe what that feeling is. It was just like this feeling of here's the wave and here is the right time to try to stand up from your belly onto your feet on the board. And I just, all I can just say is that you know, and you can feel what that wave feels like. And it was so incredibly powerful to be kind of tuned in really physically to nature that way, to like really be in tune with some part of the natural world and really connected to what that experience was like. And so I like retained that feeling in my body, in my bones when I came back. And I still, even as I'm talking about it right now, I can like feel what it was like to get up on that surfboard, but also to feel the ocean underneath me and to know when it was time to change something. So know when it was time to stop laying on my belly and to get up onto my feet. And that feeling, that true sense in your body of what something should feel like, that is really what I am talking about when I am talking about, you know, changing things in our lives in a way that is in cycles. So this cycling nature of our lives. So, you know, as women, we have to surf cycles of seasons, right? So this season that I am in right now, and I'm recording this, and I don't know when you're going to listen to it. You might be listening to it 2 years in the winter from now, but the seasons of this, of the, or the cycles of the seasons. So we have differences like here in Colorado, in the summer, it stays light until like 9 o'clock, past 9 o'clock, really to like 9:15, 9:20. There's still some light in the sky in the summer, in the, like around the summer solstice time. Where I was in Costa Rica, it stays, the light and dark stay the same most of the year, which was interesting. Like there's not a lot of light and dark changes, but here in Colorado and actually in most of the US, there's times during the, in the summer where it stays lighter for longer. Then there's times in the winter where we have very short days. So the amount of light is very short compared to the amount of dark. And that's just the visible light in the seasons, right? There's also hot and cold changes. And that's kind of what we can see. There's also our life cycles, right? So there's our life cycles from being children and adolescents and young women and kind of in these middle years that I am in and menopausal and postmenopausal. So there's this whole life cycle. We have a menstrual cycle. So if you're a menstruating woman, you have a cycle that literally your hormones are different every single day of the month, which I think is phenomenal and cool and interesting. And what we get to learn to do, and you notice I said get to, what we get to learn to do is to surf those waves, to feel in our bodies what's different, what's changing, and then respond accordingly in that moment. So not expecting things to be the same all the time, just like I don't expect the ocean to be the same all the time. And also the way that I respond, not going to be the same all the time, right? When I was out there, I was really listening and learning when there were times where you would, you know, wait for some waves to go by. You have to wait to pick your wave. So fun little lesson on cycling from the land of Costa Rica and from this experience of the summer solstice. So I also did want to just say, hey, and recognize that I have been gone for a few weeks. now you know where I was. So I think this is the longest period that I haven't recorded a podcast. It's been a solid month, I think, really, between when you got the last podcast and when you'll be getting this one. It was very interesting. Again, a whole story there. I won't tell you the entire story. We're just going to call that a summer break. I haven't had a summer break before on the podcast. I have brought you a podcast just about every week, sometimes with 1 week out. But this was the longest break I've had. We're just going to call it a summer break. I expected at least two of those weeks in Costa Rica. There were some unexpected things that happened that took me out of podcast recording mode. I'm just going to say life, and I'm back, and I'm so happy to be recording today for you. Okay, so let's get into our topic for today, which is, I'm saying DNA. Does DNA determine your metabolism? But if we're just talking about genetics, right? So when we're talking about DNA, we are talking about genetics. And there are multiple puzzle pieces to consider with metabolism. I've been talking about this a lot recently, but seasonality is actually one of those pieces. So there is a seasonality and a seasonal response. Like our bodies have been in tune with the planet and with everything that's going on around us in our physical surroundings, like since the beginning of time, right? And seasonality is certainly one of those things, but it's actually not one of the things we're going to be talking about today. So we're going to be talking into genetics and specifically what part genetics has to play with your metabolic function. So I've actually talked about genetics a couple of times on the podcast before, and I spent, I think probably the most time talking about it on episode 71. I went back and looked to see which one it was. So the episode was what your grandma has to do with your period. So we're talking about genes, genetics, how you get the body that you live in, right? So talking about grandma, of course, you know, way back, and I had a reason in episode 71 of talking specifically about your grandmother. But this is such an important part of the conversation. And I wanted to bring this different angle in, this metabolic angle into this conversation. So, you know, many women, and I hear this a lot, many women feel like their genetics have sort of cursed them with something like risks for things like, let's say, high cholesterol or autoimmunity. And, you know, certainly body composition is one of the things that I have heard, like it's just in my genetics. So maybe someone has felt like that forever. Maybe she's felt like she's just had cursed genetics. She's never felt like she was comfortable in her body, or she felt like whatever was happening physically was just, you know, handed down from her or to her. But also sometimes what I see is that a lot of women in kind of in midlife, in this like stage that I'm in, their physical body is maybe starting to transform to look something like their moms did. And there's this sort of helpless feeling that might go along with that. Like it's just, again, like a sentence that's been handed down from on high, something that has just been given and not anything that we have control over. Like if we have these genes, it's just going to be this way. And I've heard this about even cholesterol too. Like someone will say, oh, I have familial high cholesterol. I'm not going to go down the cholesterol path right now, but one thing I will say is that it's a relatively rare thing. It's like 10% of people have this familial high cholesterol versus the number of people I've heard, for example, in my practice say, oh, I have, you know, I have high cholesterol and it runs in my family, right? So here's the thing. Genes like 1000% have a role to play. And we are going to talk about what that role is today. And I'm going to give you my specific example, some things that I have seen from looking at my own genetics. And I recently did a new kind of genetic testing and I saw this, but they are not the only factor, right? So the genetics that we experience are the circumstance of the rest of our life, right? Just like when I was on that surfboard, the surfboard was one factor. The weather was another factor. The currents were another factor, right? There's many things that go in. So what I want to do today is just describe what that part is, describe the part that genetics play with metabolism, but also how we can adapt and modify what we're doing so that the environment that the genes are expressing in is going to be optimal. So this field, this idea is called epigenetics. And epigenetics is essentially the study of how genes express themselves in their environment, right? So there are the genes we just have. And the genes we have mean what color are your eyes? What color is your hair? How tall do you get to be? Even that, I will say, has an environmental component. But even some things like for women, when you start puberty and when you go through menopause, there is a strong genetic component in there. But again, it is not the only factor. But these genes, they're determining a lot about, you know, kind of what our physical experience is, what we look like, even that we are human and not like a rabbit, right? That is determined by our genetics, what our genes look like, right? Another way that I think about this is, you know, you can think about different dog breeds, right? So I happen to have an Australian Shepherd and she has Aussie genes, right? So the way that she came out, the way that she looks, there's some differences in how Aussies look. Like they have different coloring. She happens to have blue eyes. Some Aussies have brown eyes. Some have one in blue and one brown. She has very long, thick fur. Again, this is just her genetics. The dog that we had before her was a whippet. And whippets are kind of physically almost like the opposite, right? They are really, really thin. They have very little fur. Just look at it like an entirely different dog, right? So they're both dogs, but their genetics are telling their bodies to express something different. So even though they're both dogs and you can tell they're both dogs, how those genes express is determining what they look like. Excuse me. So another way to think about epigenetics. So genetics is just like what came through, right? Epigenetics means that we can turn some genes, specifically ones related to our health, we can turn them offer on. We can activate or deactivate the expression of those genes. So when a gene is expressing, it just means that it's showing up, right? The way that program, that software program, is playing in the hardware of the body. So here's one way that I think about this. So let's say you walk into a house and it's a house that has already been built, and there's just a certain number of lights and light switches. So the house comes with those lights. The number of lights and switches is not something that you have control over. The house was already built. But there are some things that you can control, like what kind of bulbs you have, whether you turn the lights on or off, and even whether you are supplying the house with electricity, right? Like there is usually a master switch somewhere outside that you could like just turn off and no electricity is going to be coming into the house. So genetics are kind of like those lights and light switches. The house is already pre-populated with those lights and switches. But what you do have control over is all of the rest, right? So you have control about the electricity running to the house. Are you going to turn that master breaker off, or are you going to leave it on? Are you going to turn the lights off or on, right? So each of those switches could be activated or deactivated. It could be turned on, turned off. This could be the bulbs that are in there, right? Are you putting in a 20-watt bulb? Are you putting in a 60-watt bulb, right? How bright are the lights going to be turning on? So you don't have control over the number of lights and you don't have control over the switches, but you can, again, you can turn them on or off. You can give them more or less electricity. You can give them a higher or lower wattage of bulb. And so basically the way that those genes are going to be expressing is within control. So the way that this is described in the genetics world is genes load the gun, but environment pulls the trigger, which is, I think, a very apt description, right? And so when we are talking about your body and what your how your body is responding to the genes that are present, those lifestyle factors, the environment of the genes, is things like what foods you eat, when, how you time them, what kind of sleep you're getting, what kind of exposure to sunlight you're getting, what kind of community you live in. Like, do you have good social ties and connections? You know, what your stress levels are, your physical activity, whether you're exercising, what kind of exercise you're doing. I mean, I could keep going, right? But like, this is where we actually get those genes expressing in a specific environment. And sometimes what we can do is we can really optimize the expression of those genes, or we can turn down or even off the expressions of genes that we don't want to be expressing. So like, for example, a gene or a genetic predisposition to certain kinds of cancer, we have control over that, right? This is not like a life sentence of like, this is how your genes are. You were just screwed. So I have started using genes and genetics personally, and I'm starting to bring this really strongly into the work that I'm doing with my clients, because it can get you so much faster to exactly which sorts of diet and lifestyle interventions are going to be working the fastest and be the most effective. So, you know, some things I've used before with my clients are having someone do like a 23andMe genetic test, or something like an Ancestry DNA, and we can extract that genetic data from the back end. And I was using some software that was kind of just early stage genetic and nutrition information that we could get from those genes. So I've used that for a long time, but we have really come a long way with our understanding of genetics, and specifically how that relates to things like our hormone balance, how that relates to things like our metabolism, how that relates to things like which foods are going to work best for us. And it's really quite exciting, I think, to be able to specifically quickly get to what's going to work for someone with a lot less trial and error. So we just gets us faster to which diet and lifestyle interventions are going to work the best and be most effective, right? That doesn't mean that if you don't have your genetic profile, you can't do this. You can't explore. You can't do a lot of trial and error. So like, for example, again, I'm going to use myself as an example here because it's the easiest for me to speak to. I have done tons of trial and error over the course of my life. And what has been so validating actually is when I've gotten this most recent genetic report back, how much of what my life experience has been and what all that life, that trial and error has borne out for me has just been proven in my genetic picture. So my own genetic report that I've most recently gotten back is actually over 200 pages, you guys. That is a lot of information. So obviously, when I'm going to be talking about with you, what I'm going to be talking about today is not like what my 200-page report looked like in depth. What I wanted to do is really just kind of share with you as myself was as an example, what that might look like when we are talking about specific foods and metabolism. Now, I will probably be sharing with you some other things. I know specifically there's going to be some mood pieces and energy pieces that, again, personally I saw in my report and personally I've experienced in my life that I want to share with you as specific episodes down the line. But I wanted just today to really talk about metabolism. So again, one of the things that I found most helpful in this genetics, looking at this was how it was really validating everything that I've already known to be true. And one thing that I was worried about when I first started diving into this genetic piece was that I would feel a sense of defeat or almost like victimhood, right? Like I was afraid that I would just be like, oh, well, here I'm screwed. I was dealt these terrible cards. Poor me. There's nothing I can do, right? And even knowing everything I know about epigenetics, I was afraid that I would have that response. And actually, it really wasn't that. So, you know, what it's done for me is just to say like, yeah, this is true, right? Like, here is something that I have experienced and I've experimented a lot, but I've experienced this thing really to be the case. And now I know like black and white on paper, this is kind of what my genetic predisposition is. So knowing that, what can I do about it, right? So I know that this is the genetic, you know, hand that I've been dealt. What can I do with this? How can I play these cards to my advantage? So rather than taking this as just like, okay, you got this. It's maybe what you didn't want. What can I do with this? How can I really optimize things? And I have really just found it actually incredibly empowering because when I have really strong knowledge, and you know that I'm always like, test, don't guess, I'm always about knowing things. And so when I have this knowledge, then I can choose what I'm going to do with that, right? What am I going to do about this? So, you know, the piece about metabolism. So again, I'm using the word metabolism really is just like, how does your body use energy, right? And really at the core, at the base level, that is what we're talking about with metabolism. How is your body using energy? What is your energy furnace like, right? Are you running hot? Are you running cold? What kinds of fuel are going to feed your energy fire? So that is going to look different for different people because of this genetic piece, right? So, you know, what I'm always talking about with my clients is bioindividuality, which just means, that's a mouthful of a word, it just means that we are all biologically unique, right? So my particular combination of genetics and life experience and lifestyle, and even things like where I grew up and how I grew up and how I, you know, what I ate when I was a kid and how I was born and all of those things, it just means that I'm going to have a unique blueprint where my body's metabolic blueprint, in addition to everything else, is going to just be a little bit different than everybody else's. It's going to be unique to me. And so again, we can figure out what that looks like for someone with some trial and error, but it's so great to have this data, right? So what does my body do? So first thing that I learned, and I had seen this in a couple of reports before, but this was really just like super clearly described, is that I am personally genetically predisposed to not handle carbs particularly well. And I do well on a lower carbohydrate diet. So a couple of interesting things about this. The first one is I'm actually in the minority with this. So it's not, even though lots of people feel like they can't eat any carbs, the truth is that I'm in the minority. More people can handle more carbs than I can. So I happen to be in the minority with this particular genetic profile. And this was also something that I really already knew from experience. I have experimented so much with this. And, you know, I have seen this directly played out with my experience. So I've also talked on the podcast about my experience with things like a continuous glucose monitor, testing blood sugar, again, as I have seen, as I've tried all kinds of different tracking strategies, what it's always come back to is I just do better with a slightly lower carb dietary strategy. Now, again, what does this mean for my personal strategy? Now, the first thing to know is that genetics are just one piece of the puzzle, right? And I'm going to keep reiterating this. Your genetics is not just like some sort of life sentence. But for me, it doesn't mean that I'm just going to automatically like hop onto something like extreme, like keto, right? I'm not just going to say like, okay, I have a tendency to not do great with carbs. I'm just going to go full on keto, right? So just remembering that genetics is just one part of the puzzle. So other parts that I use when I am looking at for myself, for my clients, when I am putting all the puzzle pieces on the table, I want to know all of the pieces of data that I have. And so I, knowing that those genetics are in, they are in a larger picture. Some of the other things that I have used are things like, you know, that I've already talked about again on the podcast. So sometimes things like my labs, right? What does my blood work look like? What do those things like the continuous glucose monitor tell me? How about some wearable technology? I've talked about my Whoop strap before. So like, where do my, do those genes come into play depending on things like my, my sleep and my, my exercise strategy, right? Also tracking my menstrual cycle. These are things that are telling me how those genes are expressing in their current environment, right? So knowing that I have those genes and that I can put those genes in environments where I'm sleeping better or sleeping not as well. I can put those genes in an environment where my my food intake is different. I can put those genes in the differences across my menstrual cycle. And when I see that data, I can see how those genetics are expressing, and then I can make decisions about how to modify those pieces, those environmental pieces, right? So genetic predisposition is not diagnostic. And I want to be really clear about that, right? It is not telling me, first of all, like, it's not going to be like you have, for example, type 2 diabetes, which is, again, if I put those genetics for a challenge with carbs into an environment where I constantly ate a really high carb and especially particularly high sugar diet for years, what would happen was that I would be probably someone who would be much more predisposed to get into full-blown, like let's say type 2 diabetes, much younger. Right. And I have a strong family history of that. So I can look at my genetics. I can look at my my dad and his dad and probably his dad before that. And I can see that there was this pattern of blood sugar dysregulation at a really, really early stage of life. Right. But for me, because I've known for years, because I was looking at my genetic expression, because I was looking at my blood work, you know, primarily, I was seeing that I was someone who needed to pay more attention to my sugar and my carbs. And I can really easily get off track with that. So again, it was not diagnostic. This genetic predisposition isn't telling me, oh, you are now diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, or even that I would at some point get that. But it's telling me, you know, that I have this predisposition. It's also not telling me things like how many grams of carbs are optimal for me and what would be the right ratio of those carbs to fat and protein and so on, right? So there is a lot that needs to be kind of teased out from this base data. So this base data is not diagnostic and it's not prescriptive either. That's the word I was looking for. It's not prescriptive. It's not telling me exactly what to do. It's telling me here are the genes you have, and now you get to decide how you are going to address that, right? So it tells me when I am creating my plan for myself, I'm already starting from a different set point, right? I am starting from a set point of my tolerance for carbs is going to be different than somebody else's. It's going to be a lower set point, right? So that doesn't mean I'm not sometimes doing higher and sometimes doing lower within a range. My range just happens to be lower than some of my clients, quite frankly, right? So my times where I'm cycling, and again, this is just like my analogy from the beginning. This is just like surfing the waves, you guys, right? So when I'm surfing the waves, and I have a higher carb, like a higher wave versus a lower carb, lower wave, time of meals. So some meals are going to be higher, some lower, based on lots of factors personal to me, right? So my higher versus lower carb meals and my meal times when I'm eating those carbs are going to look different for me based on that data than for some of my clients who might do better with carbs, right? So again, it's not prescriptive. It's not telling me this is how many grams to eat. It's not telling me when. I have to figure that out and decide for myself. What it's telling me is, hey, your window is a little different. That range that you're doing versus somebody else is a little different. So I'm just working within a different range, right, than I would give to somebody else. So that's just a great like piece of knowledge for me. I'm never going to go into a really high carb state and expect that to work for me metabolically because I just don't handle that as well. So other macro that came up for me was my fats. And so I do tolerate kind of like a moderate amount of fats. I'm not someone who does great on a super high fat diet. Again, great information. One reason I'm not going to hop like hardcore into keto, unless there was at some point, again, maybe down the road, there would be some genetic reason or some sort of health reason that would lead me to do that for a short period of time. But genetically, I also don't do great with, I'm kind of like, I think at a moderate level, I'm kind of mid-level with saturated fats. So when I'm looking at the fats I'm eating, I'm not going to go crazy super high fat. I'm also not going to be putting a huge amount of focus on saturated fats. Now, does that mean I don't eat any saturated fats? No. Saturated fats are incredibly important. This is part of how anybody's body is going to run. Everybody needs some amount of saturated fat, right? We need it for building healthy hormones. We need it for metabolizing our nutrients, right? A lot of nutrients are fat soluble. We need it for brain function. So there is a need for some amount of this. It's just that for me personally, again, looking genetically, I'm going to do better metabolically. My metabolic health, my energy fire, my energy furnace is going to burn cleanest on this kind of fuel, right? I'm not going to put diesel into an unleaded engine because my car won't run. I want my car to run. I want it to run really well for as long as possible. So when I'm looking at the kinds of fats I'm eating, I'm kind of looking at moderate amount of fat, and I'm going to be putting a heavier emphasis on other kinds of fat, not as high ratio-wise on the saturated fat. I'm looking more towards some of the more like monounsaturated fats. Now, I don't think anybody is going to do well with high amounts of the polyunsaturated fats, particularly not the ones I would get from just like eating some nuts, for example, but like the rancid industrial seed oils, pretty much everyone's going to do poorly on that, right? I did an episode a few episodes back on how fixing your fats can help heal your metabolism, right? So I'm not going into those fats. And my genetics don't tell me that either. I don't think anyone's genetics would tell them that they did great on like soybean oil because that's just shit. But this is kind of just giving me this picture. So I'm looking at how do I do with carbs, how do I do with fat? And then again, specifically what kinds of fats work for me, what is going to help my energy fire run best. And I could be really strategic around that, right? So two more like just quick pieces that I'm going to share about kind of this metabolic piece for me so one of them is something called a methylation profile. Now, some of you out there do know that you might have this MTHFR gene or now there's multiple genetics that go into that. So I'm just going to be specific there, but this MTHFR is a difference in methylation, which is related to detoxification, right? And it typically means you might need a different form of B vitamin for optimal function, right? And specifically related to metabolic function. So we do need B vitamins for good metabolic function. And some of us are also going to need different kinds of B vitamins based on our genetics. So I have one of these genes that is different, right? So it does mean I require a slightly different B vitamin picture. But the exact kind of genetic difference that I have, this it's called a polymorphism, is just like a difference, right? The difference thing for me is there is a kind of B vitamin that I am going to do best with, a particular B12 to be specific, that is different than the form that is actually in most B vitamins, right? And I had learned this, maybe 4 or 5 years ago for myself when I just looked at this part of my genetics. So I already knew, for example, that this there's a form of B vitamin called methylcobalamin, which is often what's best for people who have issues with methylation or have this kind of polymorphism with this particular MTHFR gene. I don't necessarily want to have that methylated B12. So I personally, again, with my genetics, do better with a different form of B vitamin, not that methylated form, right? So again, this, I already had known that from both my genetics profile that I'd done before. I also knew it from personal experience. If I did these high doses of this methylated B12, I tend to feel really anxious. And so it gets me kind of, it's the phrase is over methylated, but it just kind of makes me feel like my engine is overly revved. And as someone who I already, again, like knew this, but I have experienced anxiety quite a lot in my life before. And I already knew that. Again, like I saw it on my genes. It's another part of my genetic predisposition that I saw in black and white, which was fascinating to me, was this kind of tendency towards more anxiousness. But that B12 would kind of amp that up for me. So that particular form would make me feel like more amped and more anxious. And so I really needed a different form of B vitamin that would help me feel a little bit calmer. So that is just another really fascinating piece of like, there are not just nutrients that we can use to turn genetics off or on, but particular forms that actually might make things a little bit different for us. I am also somebody who can convert the form of vitamin A, so beta carotene that is in plant food. I can convert that into active vitamin A, right? So the form of vitamin A that comes in plant food isn't actually usable by our bodies. It has to get converted to this active usable form. I am somebody who can make that conversion of, again, under ideal circumstances. So there's other pieces that go into that, but I can do it. Whereas I've had other clients who cannot, right? They cannot make that conversion. And so they will become deficient in vitamin A if they were to go, for example, into a plant-based diet. If they were not eating any animal sources of vitamin A, they really wouldn't be able to get sufficient vitamin A from the food they were eating because they couldn't make that conversion. Okay. So those are some genetic pieces that might be impacting your metabolism. So what I wanted to just wrap up and review with is you do have genetics. You can't necessarily, you have no control over the genetics you got, right? So, you know, what your parents passed down to you, you just have that. You do have some control over whether or not those genes are expressing, and you have control over how much they are expressing, right? So we don't have all the control in the world. I can't genetically, like, I can't do anything. I can eat different foods and make my kind of hazily green eyes turn blue, right? That's just not going to happen. But there are a lot of health expressions. There are a lot of genetic pieces that we can turn off or on. And the way that we turn them off or on, or even just optimize how they're expressing, which is really what I was talking about today, we can optimize how they're expressing by the environment we put them in, right? So for me, again, somebody who personally, like I said, does better with a lower carb diet, what I'm going to say is how those genes are expressing, I'm going to control that by the dietary and lifestyle input. Right. The fats that I'm eating, again, expressing those genes, those are genes I have, and how my metabolism is functioning, I can actually impact and change based on what I'm choosing to eat within that framework of I have this genetics for how I process fats, right? So those are things that I am not just like cursed with a quote unquote slow metabolism. I can see how I can actually change my metabolic function based on the environment that I'm putting my genetics in. All right, you guys. So hopefully that gave you some empowered feelings. So you're not just at the mercy of your genes. We do have the genes, but you're not at the mercy of them. You can actually impact how they express based on the things that you are choosing. So if you want to figure out more about how your genetics might be impacting your metabolic function or how things are expressing in your body, then let's talk. So you can schedule a time to talk with me. We can talk about how I use this, particularly in how I work with my clients. And if this might be a useful tool in your arsenal. So the link will be in the show notes, but it is just bit.ly/hormonehealing20. That is bit.ly/hormonehealing20. And we can talk about how you could use genetics to figure out your hormones and metabolism. All right, you guys, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend, and I will see you next time.
Hey, if you've been on the hormonal roller coaster and want to know how to put the theories and strategies shared on this podcast to work for your body, I want to invite you to join me in my program, The Bitch Fix in Six Steps to Happy Hormones. I'll help you heal your hormones naturally so you can get your mood, energy, and mojo back and live the badass life you were designed for. This is the work I've done with hundreds of women, and it can work for you too. To learn more, go to thebitchfixin6.com. I can't wait to meet you inside.